This ministry is supported by the members and friends of First Unitarian Church of Des Moines. If you would like to support future podcasts, go to www.ucdsm.org to make your contribution.
Did you recognize that poem, the Richard Blanco? Do you remember where we first heard that? It's perfect for this week, I think, because it was an inaugural poem. It was a poem that Richard Blanco read at an inauguration. And I think it was beautifully done for a couple of reasons. One, you caught that he was talking about one sky and one sun and one moon that draws us together as one country. But, of course, the entire poem is written in a way that we can expand that out to one world and one people. I think it's a beautiful, fitting reflection, especially for this week and this season. And it came to mind when I was thinking about the other reading for this service that was where my meditations began, the words of the Reverend Mark Morrison Reed. The central task of religious community is to unveil the bonds that bind each to all. There's a connectedness, a relationship that is discovered amid the particularities of our own lives and the lives of others, a relationship that once we feel it inspires us to act for justice. It is the church that assures us that we are not struggling for justice on our own, but as members of a larger community. The religious community is essential, for alone our vision is too narrow to see all that must be seen, and our strength too limited to do all that must be done. Together, our vision widens and our strength is renewed. Morrison Reed is speaking of the power and potential that arises out of our coming together in religious community. Implicit in his vision is the healing that is possible in the connecting, the wholeness that we glimpse as we unveil the bonds that bind each to all. Implicit is the joy, too. And all that, for me, is wrapped up in the work of religious community. Discovering, amid the particularity of our lives, relationship, connection. We are not alone. That's why I'm here. That's why I come to church. And I am so happy, as I said, to be with you here in Des Moines this weekend. I do hope you know that this congregation, your ministry, and your ministers have such a strong reputation in our movement for the good work that happens here. I'm glad for this opportunity to thank you for the ways you live your faith, in particular, through your generosity to our association. My ministry now at the UUA is helping to fund our faith. Very glamorous. But through this work, I have this great privilege of meeting with generous individuals and congregations who understand the importance of our larger faith, the larger association that makes the fabric of our faith possible. Now, some of you may not really know what the UUA is. I want to say just briefly, there are two ways that we talk about the Unitarian Universalist Association. One is, the most important is, all of us. It's all of us who call ourselves Unitarian Universalists, all of our congregations together, living our faith and practicing our values in the world. That's the UUA. The UUA is also a body, an administrative and staffed body that lives out a mission, which is to support the life-saving and world-changing work of our congregations, to amplify our moral voice in the larger world, and to protect our history and our future for those who will come after us. You may not know that this congregation is among our most generous supporters. We thank you for your leadership and generosity. Your support funds the training, credentialing, settling of religious professionals, the development of tools for congregations to improve their outreach, training for youth and young adults, religious education resources like OWL, gatherings and support for UUs of color, our important social witness on civil, environmental, and economic justice, and so much more. I could talk about that all day, but I think that's not what Mark was expecting. I encourage you to find out more on our website, uua.org, and in particular, you can find a brand new Introduction to Unitarian Universalism video that just came out late last week. I think you'll enjoy it. So go peruse the website, find out more about what your generosity supports. I love that this is my job, thanking you and celebrating your generosity. Generosity is actually always what I talk about when I preach, and it always has been. This morning, I want to look at one way of leading to healing, of unveiling the bonds that bind each to all, of living religiously. It isn't anything new. The story of the fishes and loaves that I shared earlier, I believe, is a beautiful illustration of this kind of leadership. Consider the circumstances of the story, not unfamiliar to us, right? Strangers figure prominently in the story. I don't know, they may speak another language, come from another land. There might not be enough for everyone. Jobs might feel scarce, resources too. We aren't sure what's going to happen next. In other words, humans living together. The disciples are ready to send the people away, avoid a confrontation, keep what little they have for themselves. It's not that they're being outrageously selfish. They're responding the way I would respond much of the time. Bad things happen, you know? You shouldn't trust just anyone. There might not be enough. It's only right to protect what is ours. The miracle story, though, is an invitation for us to consider another way. Call it living generously or precariously with your water glass. Thank you very much. Call it living generously. And by living generously, I am not talking about what you give away. That's really a secondary matter. I mean, most of all, how we receive life and how we receive each other. Giving's the easy part. It's the receiving, I think, that really challenges us. So when we live generously, I think there are three important parts of this. First, we affirm the goodness of life with gratitude. Second, we open ourselves to the connection and kinship all around us. And finally, we trust the abundance of life so that we do not have to spend our lives hoarding, either spiritually or materially. First, affirming life's goodness is not always easy. Take any given morning. How I wake actually is a great barometer for me on how I'm doing spiritually. One poet writes of the importance of waking slowly and listening for the little chorus of good intentions all around us. How I wish I could tune my ears better for that. Sometimes I do okay, but there are mornings when all I can hear is conspiracy. Dogs barking, trucks outside, even my husband, who rises early to do yoga. At first blush, I am certain they have gotten together and planned elaborate ways to ruin my waking, to sabotage my entire day. Some mornings, I am sure the world has it out for me. Not such a generous way to greet the gift of a new day. Then there are those blessed mornings. Sometimes I just wake that way, or maybe I did my own yoga to center myself. Those blessed mornings when I receive the new day as the gift that it is, with the generosity of spirit. Anyone having a morning like that? The best way I know to practice receiving the gift of life with the generosity of spirit, the best way I know, is living in the midst of religious community. Worship, or the celebration of life or services like this are a ritualized affirmation of the goodness of life, a reminder, I need these. Second, living generously means opening ourselves to the connections and kinship all around us. The Bible story really does say that Jesus told them to get into groups and sit on the grass. Have you ever seen that part of the story before? I had not. It really does say that. The central task of religious community is to unveil the bonds that bind each to all. A relationship, connectedness, is discovered amid the particularity of our lives and the lives of others. In religious community, we know we are not alone. Or, if we don't always know it, Mark is always saying it, right? Or Sue is reminding us, or John. Cultivating generosity in our most intimate relationships is especially important. My most intimate relationships and my relationships within religious community are the ones that sustain me so that I can, in turn, live generously in the big world out there. I do not always get it right. I need frequent chances to forgive myself and to forgive you so that I can begin again. Grounded, though, in the blessing of my partner's love, my dear friend's love, the assurance that you see me and accept me as I am strong enough to open my heart and humbly meet others with respect and even generosity. Finally, living generously means trusting that there is enough. Now, we all know that 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish is not enough to feed 5,000 people. We know that at the rate we are using natural resources of our planet, there will not be enough. Natural resources are not limitless, even though we often act as though they are. We get it backwards. We live as though natural resources are never going to run out. We thoughtlessly use water and oil as though it will always be there for us. But so often, we hoard love and goodwill. We have it backwards. The good news is, love doesn't run out. Goodwill is consistently a renewing resource. And if we can get this right, there will be enough. If we can unveil the bonds that bind each to all, discovering the connectedness, the relationship, that assurance, that experience does change us. How can we hoard what we have, materially or spiritually, when we know another's suffering? When we recognize in the face of another the same longing and hope that we feel in our own hearts? It begins with how we receive life and how we receive each other. If we can get this right, there will be enough. I believe that with all my heart. I love what Mark said last week in his sermon about the importance of encountering one another wholeheartedly and humbly. That is essential. On a trip a few years ago, I met Bob. He's a Unitarian Universalist in California. His congregation, like many, opened their doors, as you are, I gather, later this month, for people who don't have anywhere else to sleep, for people who are homeless. Bob has been a volunteer for the program in addition to serving as president of the congregation. He's also a business leader and a consultant. One day, I didn't get the details of exactly how this happened, but one day Bob decided that he was going to do more than volunteer by setting up the beds or serving the food, but also that he wanted to take photographs of the men spending the night at the church. Over time, it actually evolved into a rather elaborate project. He recruited a youth in the congregation to interview the men, and they've put together a book of the photographs alongside the biographies. This exhibit They also have a large-scale exhibit that has shown in museums and galleries. Bob's goal was to take photographs of men who were homeless that didn't look like photographs of homeless men. He didn't dress the men up or cover up the truth of their life circumstance. He merely spent time with them. 20 minutes, he said, for each man, snapping about 200 pictures. I didn't say, I think, Bob is not a professional photographer in any way, shape, or form. He just loved to take pictures. He took about 200 of each man, talking to them as he was taking their picture, learning a little bit about them, watching as they would gradually let down barriers, take off their masks, and reveal something about themselves. He calls the exhibit Inherent Worth and Dignity. The pictures are breathtaking. You can find them online, and I actually have the book, and I'll bring it out. But you can find it online if you Google Inherent Worth and Dignity Photography. It's worth seeing. All of this was powerful for Bob, new to photography, as I said, but a lifelong student of people. But even he was surprised one evening when he was in line for dinner with some of the men staying the night. A man Bob hadn't seen before turned to him and asked, was he the one taking the lucky pictures? He wanted to be the next subject. Bob said yes and asked what he meant by lucky pictures. Haven't you noticed? The man asked him. Many of the men whose pictures you've taken aren't here anymore. They've gotten jobs, places to live. Bob was concerned about managing expectations and was pretty sure all of this was a coincidence. No, the man insisted. It's the pictures. Bob asked if it was because they used the pictures on job applications. No, that wasn't it. The man explained, in the mornings, instead of looking in the mirror, they would look at their picture and by doing so see themselves differently, see themselves as Bob had seen them. The central task of religious community is to unveil the bonds that bind each to all. Living generously, may we look beneath the veils of difference and fear and find there is enough. There is enough. We are enough.